Okay, so welcome everybody to our book, to the book launch for the book of on non-performing loans and resolving private sector insolvency. So we have so this book is edited by Platon Monocrousos and Christos Gortzos, both of whom are here and will give some tell us a few things about the book. Also, we are we have the pleasure of having Nicholas Karamouzis here as well to give his who has contributed to the book and also kind of give some remarks about his view on the on the issues that are addressed in the book. So, actually, how am I going to speak first? You will go first, or
Mr.
Karamouzis will go first. Okay, so Mr. Karamouzis will go first. Mr. Karamouzis is the chairman of the board of directors of Eurobank Ergasias, one of the four one of the four big Greek banks. He's also emeritus professor at the University of Piraeus in Greece. So Platon Monocrousos and Christos Gortzos will speak. So Platon Monocrousos is chief economist and deputy general manager at Eurobank, and he's also visiting professor of practice at the Hellenic Observatory at the LSE. And Christos Gortzos is a professor of public economic law at the Law School of the National and Kapodistrian University of Athens. And he's also Brodel Fellow at the European University Institute in Florence. So all three of them are well-known experts on Greek on issues related to banks. And, of course, they have kind of a lot extensive and valuable experience on these issues in Greece. So we very much look forward to hearing their comments about the book and about the broader issues. So without saying anything more, let me also say something more, which is that this is the book, and the book actually is on sale outside the will be on sale outside the room after the event, and there will be there's a flyer that you can get. Where is the flyer, by the way?
Outside.
All right. With the flyer, you can get a discount, and you can buy the book at a discounted price of $34.99. And there's there will be a wine reception after the event as well, just outside here. Okay. So, Mr. Karamouzis.
Thank you very much for the introduction. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, dear colleagues. I would like to thank the Hellenic Observatory of London School of Economics for their invitation and for hosting this very interesting event. It's a privilege for me to have the opportunity to speak in front of such a distinguished audience at one of the best universities in the world. Special thanks to Professor Dimitris Vagianos for chairing tonight's event. Foremost, however, I would like to thank and congratulate the editors of the book, Christos Gortzos and Platon Monocrousos. I had and still have the opportunity to work with both of them closely on different occasions, and I very much appreciate both their high-level professionalism and their outstanding qualities as individuals. It's also a great asset of the book that such a distinguished group of market practitioners and academicians have contributed their work to this highly valuable and very interesting research project. The book entitled Non-Performing Loans and Resolving Private Sector Insolvency provides a comprehensive review of the challenges arising from a sharp increase in non-performing loans, a very topical and multifaceted issue for several euro area periphery economies like Greece. The book draws conclusions from the European experience so far, and the lessons learned, including the need to introduce an effective legal framework for NPE and NPL management, and the difficult issues of strategic defaulters, moral hazard, market distortions, and the potential implications of unfair competition. We all agree, I think, that a substantial reduction of the stock of NPEs and NPLs is a critical prerequisite for restoring financial stability, improving market confidence as well as trust in the financial sector, enhancing the ability of the banking sector to finance the economy, and thereby a sustainable economic recovery. Several comments on my part relate to the Greek significant NPE and NPL problem and in grappling with the highest NPE ratio in the Eurozone today, along Cyprus that we fight who is, has the highest ratio, unfortunately. The problem was created mostly by the adverse microeconomic conditions and an unprecedented crisis, definitely not by idiosyncratic characteristics of the Greek banking system, which played a minor role. Let me briefly describe the sheer size of the NPE and NPL problem in Greece and explain the lines of defense and the buffers available to Greek banks in dealing with such an acute problem. Greek banks today, based on the second quarter 2017 results, reported NPEs of 102 billion euros, NPLs 73 billion euros, and total outstanding private sector loans of 190 billion euros, GDP at 180 billion euros roughly. Therefore, close to half of total loans reported are either NPLs or NPEs, NPEs being a broader definition of non-performing loans. Against this sizable stock of NPEs and NPLs, the four significant Greek banks have already taken 53 billion euros worth of provisions, reaching an average coverage ratio of 50% for NPEs and 69% of NPLs. Those coverage ratios are above average compared with the other European countries, southern or central. In addition, Greek banks maintain today among the highest core Tier 1 ratios in Eurozone, 17.2% on average, or 33 billion euros of capital, while on a fully loaded basis, which is the more strict definition of capital, the capital ratio on average stands close to 16.3%, again among the highest in Eurozone. As such, Greek banks have a sizable capital buffer well above the minimum required by SSM, estimated, in my view, around 12.25%. Admittedly, part of the capital base of Greek banks is in the form of DTA, DTC, a lower quality capital asset, especially if financial losses are recorded by the banks the year ahead. So it's critical that banks continue to remain organically profitable. Otherwise, the value of DTA, DTC would go down. Clearly, this is a risk factor. We recognize it. But note that this is a common characteristic in the capital structure of other European banks, especially southern European banks. And moreover, both the SSM and DGCOM have ruled on the issue by recognizing that DTA, DTC are accepted as part of our capital structure. It's also worth noting that approximately 60% of the NPEs are secured mostly with real estate assets, valued at current prices after three stress tests, 40% lower than at the pre-crisis levels. In addition, and this is very important, something that IMF is downplayed a lot, which is wrong. In contrast with the Italian banks, Greek banks boast strong pre-provision income levels, forecast at 4.2 billion euros annualized for 2017. This is extremely important because on a three-year horizon, that constitutes in a static way an additional 12.6 billion euros of a buffer of potential provisions to deal with NPEs, NPLs, before capital is affected. What I'm saying here is the Greek banks should report the next 3 years zero profitability and take the entire non-provision income as provisions. So in that way, they would have another 12.5 billion euros of buffer to use against NPL performance before capital is affected. Furthermore, and I go faster now, note the following points about the Greek banking system. Capital ratios are organically improving every quarter the last 5 or 6 quarters. Banks have returned to organic profitability after 10 years of consecutive losses. NPE and NPL stocks are slowly declining. NPE stock is down 5 billion euros since the beginning of the year. NPE and NPL formation has stabilized and on a declining trend. We have been through 3 asset quality reviews and stress tests conducted by the regulator with the use of international advisors in the last 7 years. These reviews have led to 3 recapitalizations, 64 billion euros increase in capital in the last few years. The last one, close to 15 billion euros, it was based on the adverse stress test scenario, okay, which has not materialized at all. On the contrary, in reality today, macro and financial conditions are substantially better than the assumptions assumed in the adverse stress test scenario. So you understand that it's difficult for the regulator now, to be honest, to come out and say that what we have done 18 months ago or 20 months ago, it was not as solid as it should have been. The upcoming new stress test in spring 2018 to be performed by under EBA uniform methodology is not a pass or fail test. Okay? The results will be reflected by the regulator in the SREP Core Tier 1 requirements for each bank. This is more technical, but it's very important. And this is an important difference between the way Europeans approach regulation vis-à-vis the IMF or perhaps the Americans. That means that in case of a bank needs further capital strengthening, the bank will have time to submit a plan to meet those stricter requirements. Firstly, through capital enhancing initiatives, you can do other things, okay? Selling assets, reducing costs. And secondly, if necessary, via a capital increase. Now, to accelerate, I would say that I have several indicators that show that conditions in the Greek banking system are improving. I will tell you only one. Despite capital controls, despite the slow return of deposits, which has accelerated in recent months, so we had 3.5 billion increase in deposit flow the last 3 months, we have been able to lower ELA dependency from 86 billion euros summer of 2015, those you remember the Varoufakis semester, down today to 28 billion euros. Okay. So this is an amazing reduction of dependency, the same time that we have capital controls and slow return on deposits. The economy, after 10 years of recession, is coming to a positive outcome this year, between 1.5 to 1.7 positive growth. Unemployment is going down with low quality employment, part-time and so forth and so on, but it's coming down. Now, clearly, banks, European and Greeks, have ahead of us the next 6 to 9 months some difficult challenges. We have a number of new regulatory compliance requirements like IFRS 9, TAR, TRIM, calendar provisioning, 2018 NPA reduction targets, as well as the upcoming in the spring stress tests, which could, each one of them and all of them together, have a negative impact on capital position of the Greek banks. But the impact of all these above factors I mentioned is not additive. It tends to be rather complementary. Note that also the IMF has tend not to recognize that we have a plan as a banking sector to reduce NPLs the next for 3 years. We have committed a specific plan to the regulator and to our shareholders to lower NPEs by 40 billion euros the next 2.5 years. Okay? This is a 38% reduction in the NPEs. Okay? Banks are likely to meet the 2017 targets for NPE reductions. It's also encouraging that after years of delay in Greece, the proper legal framework for managing NPEs and NPLs is finally in place, from the option to sell loans to electronic auctions, new OCW framework, new business insolvency law, and third-party NPL services functionality. It is critical that electronic auctions to take place uninterruptedly because they discourage strategic defaulters, are more transparent, but most importantly, they improve the liquidity value of collaterals, something that is technically extremely important in modeling NPL provisioning. Now, come now more interesting. Mm-hmm. A word about the upcoming stress test and the recent institutional debate about how they should be conducted. We absolutely believe that we should not turn a hypothetical future recapitalization issue, which has not been documented, into a loose public debate, as IMF has done recently, publicly requesting another AQR and speculating that additional capital injections is needed. Doing so backfires on the banks and the economy by encouraging strategic defaulters, estimated to be 25% of total NPLs, fueling speculative market behavior, we have seen that in the previous weeks, what happened, undermining deposit gathering efforts, and increasing moral hazard behavior. We should put our trust in the ECB single supervisory mechanism that has the responsibility within Eurozone to evaluate and determine each bank's financial and capital position. SSM, based on its own assessment, will discuss with each bank's management and board separately and privately potential capital needs, and they would request the submission of a plan of actions to rectify an impossible capital shortfall based on facts and proper analysis. I believe that the issue of NPEs and NPL in Greece cannot be resolved overnight. There is no credible overnight solution. We have to follow a gradual but accelerated approach in addressing the NPE-NPL problem. A fire sales approach, given the unprecedented size of the problem, especially in the current uncertain environment of limited credibility and market access, high interest rates and risk premium discount factors. Investors on NPLs are demanding 25% return. So if you do the calculations, it becomes a bit offer price are quite apart. We have a fragile steel economy, and so a fire sales approach, I think, would stabilize the system. To me, the critical factor, and I'm closing with that, is that NPL management would improve a lot if we have a growing economy. We need to have an economy that grows. We have to have an economy that grows with 3%, 4%, and interest rates to go down. That improves a lot the environment in which we manage NPLs, and I hope that this will be the outcome of the economic policy. Thank you very much.
Professor Vagianos, dear Chairman, Mr. Karamouzis, thank you very much for your kind introduction and very insightful comments. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to thank you very much on behalf of the editorial team for responding to our invitation for the launch of our new Palgrave Macmillan book on non-performing loans and resolving private sector insolvency, experiences from the EU periphery and the case of Greece, which is, has been written under the auspices of the Hellenic Bank Association. A couple of words about the whole purpose of this project, the aim of this project, and some words about the content of the book. So the book draws on the existing experience, international experience, and the international literature, the empirical and theoretical literature, to assess and discuss the challenges faced by a number of euro area periphery economies in dealing with the very significant increase in non-performing loans following the outbreak of the global financial crisis of 2007-2008. The book takes a look at several euro area periphery economies that faced a quite significant increase in non-performing loans and significant insolvency problems in the private sector, including the cases of Greece, Cyprus, Ireland, Spain. The case of Denmark is also analyzed in a separate chapter as a rough proxy for the Nordic experience in dealing with household and corporate insolvency cases. The book presents a number of empirical econometric studies on the determinants of NPLs and loan loss provisions in the Greek banking system, because Greece is a special case, is an ideal laboratory, in our opinion, to examine several related issues, not only related to the provisioning policies of the banking system and the significant increase in the ratio of non-performing loans to total loans, but also to look at empirically examine issues related, for instance, to moral hazard and strategic default. Overall, the book provides quite useful lessons on how to deal with private sector insolvency following the global financial crisis by designing efficient frameworks to deal with insolvency that can afford a fresh start to liquidity constraint, but viable, let's say, borrowers, and minimize market distortions and moral hazard. The book consists of 16 chapters. We had a number of contributed with very significant research pieces, and the pool of contributors, this group of contributors, includes leading academics and top market practitioners in writing this book. Before I talk more specifically about some of the chapters of this book, I would like to show you a few graphs that portray the evolution of some key determinants of non-performing loans in the euro area periphery, and also look at the initial conditions at the outbreak, around the time of the outbreak of the global economic crisis. The first group of charts look at the evolution of real output growth in the euro area periphery. All indices are normalized so as to equal 100 when the crisis erupted in the year 2007. And as you may see here, the economic contraction in terms of lost output in Greece has been significantly worse than the euro area average, of course, and all other euro area economies. So in terms of one of the most significant, let's say, macroeconomic drivers of NPLs, Greece suffered a quite significant contraction of domestic economic activity. The same picture applies for the unemployment rates. Both the theoretical and the empirical literature signify macroeconomic variables such as real GDP and the unemployment rate are significant, let's say, determinants and drivers of private sector insolvency and the level of NPLs. And on that account, Greece has fared much worse relative to both the euro area average and all other euro area periphery economies. The same situation with the real house price index, which is a very significant indicator which reflects the evolution of collateral values, but also is considered to be a very useful proxy for strategic default behavior, because according to the international literature, negative equity of property, of collateral, can be considered as a key determinant of strategic default behavior. And as you may see here, leading into the outbreak of the global financial crisis, in the case of Greece, real housing prices increased by around 37% cumulatively. Then there has been a very significant decline of around 44 percentage points, again on a cumulative basis. And the decline since the crisis erupted in real housing prices in Greece has been much more ferocious, much steeper than the decline of real housing prices in many other euro area periphery economies. A few words about initial conditions. The outbreak of the global financial crisis found Greece in a much better position in terms of overall private sector leverage vis-à-vis other euro area periphery economies. For instance, the total private sector credit to GDP ratio in Greece has been much lower than most other euro area periphery economies. The same picture with bank assets as a percentage of GDP. These indicators suggest and support the view that the crisis in Greece started as a purely fiscal crisis, which mutated eventually into a severe economic downturn, a severe liquidity squeeze for the domestic financial system, which eventually led to a very significant solvency crisis for the banking system, especially after the implementation of the PSI exercise and the debt buyback, which totally eroded the full capital base of the domestic banking system and associated the first banking sector recapitalization. The current problem faced by the country is quite significant. This bar chart shows the ratio of total non-performing loans, including restructured loans, as a percentage of total loans. This ratio is currently close to 46-47% in the case of Greece. It is quite elevated in the case of Cyprus as well, and is much higher than the euro area average. This graph shows the evolution of NPLs plus restructured loans, again as a percentage of total loans, and the breakdown in terms of major categories of loans: consumer, mortgages, corporate loans. And you may see the sharp increase in non-performing loans increase over the last several years. Of course, as the chairman, our chairman, said, the Greek bank system, Greek banks have committed to quite ambitious and manageable, in my opinion, targets to reduce the total volume of NPEs, non-performing exposures, by 38% by the end of 2019. And so far, Greek banks have been basically successful in meeting those targets. And as a final note, I would like to say a few things about the book chapters. And here again we have 16 chapters, starting with chapter 2. The first chapter has been co-authored by Professor Gorgios and myself, and is a kind of introductory chapter to the book. Chapter 2, non-performing loans, challenges and options for banks and corporations, contributed by Rodrigo Olivares Caminal and Andrea Miglionico, talks about the lack of common financial language in as regards the classification of bank assets, and they highlight the need to basically create a more holistic approach to balance sheet regulation. The chapter number 3 provides a review of the macroeconomic, bank-specific, and borrower-specific and regulatory determinants of NPLs. The chapter has been contributed by Konstantinos Nikolopoulos and Andreas Tsalas. Mr. Tsalas is actually with us tonight. The following few chapters discuss the experience of several euro area periphery economies in dealing with private sector insolvency and the problem of NPLs. Chapter 8, which has been contributed by Mr. Nikolaos Karamouzis, The Road to Recovery, Are Banks Able to Finance Greece's Economic Recovery, talks about the challenges faced currently by the domestic banking system in terms of access to interbank liquidity, in terms of ways to deal with the legacy of the crisis, meaning the very high ratio of NPLs. Chapter 9, which has been co-authored by Professor Thomakos, Professor Alexopoulos, Eleni Diatsioli, and myself, talks about the drivers of loan loss provisions in the Greek banking system. Chapter 10, it's a very, very insightful chapter which presents an empirical study on strategic default behavior in the Greek corporate sector. The chapter utilizes a quite novel data set consisting of around 14,000 corporate accounts in Greece. The authors suggest that one out of six corporate NPLs in Greece may relate to strategic default behavior. The chapter also provides several other empirical, quite interesting empirical findings. For instance, the authors claim that there is a negative link, a negative relationship between the value of the collateral and strategic default behavior. Chapter 11, financial distress, moral hazard aspects, and NPL formation under a long-lasting recession, as well as the next chapter, chapter 12, non-performing loans in the Greek banking system, navigating through the perfect storm, contributed by Mr. Kapopoulos, Αργυρόπουλος, Ζεκεντέ, and Pavlos Milonas and Nikos Maginas. These are two empirical studies that look again at the macroeconomic determinants of non-performing loans in Greece. The study in chapter 12 also looks at a range of other more intrinsic determinants, such as quite elevated uncertainty over the last several years, the tight liquidity conditions in the Greek economy, the fiscal pressure felt by households and corporations in the context of a very significant fiscal adjustment program that has been implemented in Greece. Again, these two chapters also provide quite significant and interesting empirical results. Chapter 13, which has been written by Nikolaos Vetas, Sofia Stavraki, and Michalis Vasiliadis, propose a financial tool to finance performing but past due SME loans by utilizing EU structural funds. Chapter 14, contributed by, again, Mr. Panagidis, Mrs. Lolou and Nikos Vetas, talk about the evolution of the household and corporate insolvency frameworks in Greece. Chapter 15, co-authored by Mr. Vasilis Panagiotidis and Professor Christos Gorgios, talk about financial inclusion and provide an overview of the various dimensions and its assistance in reducing private sector insolvency. And chapter 16 concludes with an overview of the post-crisis corporate insolvency and creditor rights in Greece. Before I ask to the podium Professor Gorgios to continue with the presentation, I would like to very much express my appreciation, first of all, to Professor Dimitris Varianos for chairing this session, to our chairman, Mr. Karamouzis, for his very significant contribution. Without his contribution, this work would not be complete. And we are hopeful that under his leadership and guidance, the domestic banking system will manage to navigate through this quite difficult and challenging period for the domestic banking system and the Greek economy. I would also like to thank all of the leading academics and market practitioners who contributed with quite significant research pieces in this book. Special thanks to Mrs. Eleni Lidiatsioli, who is with us today, who contributed, besides her very significant contribution to our book, she has also provided quite useful assistance in the whole editing process of this book. Levia is currently a lawyer working in Brussels with White & Case. Very special thanks to Mrs. Polly Liuta for her, from LSE, for her assistance in organizing this event. And last but not least, my special thanks to Anna Dimitriadou, my colleague at the European, at the Eurobank Research Department, for her valuable assistance in completing, putting together the material for this book. Professor Gorgios, the podium is yours.
Yeah, it's the same presentation. Thank you very much. First of all, it's a great pleasure to be here. Thank you, Kevin, for making that possible, and your colleagues. Many thanks to the chairman of the Hellenic Bank Association, Professor Karamouzis. Dear Nick, thank you for your assistance and the very kind words you mentioned before about myself and Platon. Dimitri, thank you for sharing that. I'm very glad to be here, and I'm very glad to see that in the audience some previous students of mine are here, which I know that they are performing very well, and definitely much better than the average loans in the Eurozone periphery. They keep in touch with me, so I know how they do. And thank you all for being here. I will not make it long. I think most has already been said. If you allow me only one aspect which potentially should have been mentioned first, but since I happened to be the collective memory of the Hellenic Bank Association for so many years, I should mention that this is the fourth book, but the first in English, and that's a pity for the previous ones, which was written under the auspices of the Hellenic Bank Association with the leadership of the chairman of the scientific committee, and with the contribution and support of the Secretary General of the Banking Association, which happened to be myself. So the fifth book will not be Gorgios anymore. I'm not anymore the Secretary General, but it has been a great pleasure that George Provopoulos and Gikas Hardouvelis have been the first contributors to that. and Platos Monocrusos was the fourth, Masourakis was the third. And you know Platon, the legacy of that. Provopoulos became the governor of the Bank of Greece. Hardouvelis a minister, I don't know what's your fate. The distribution of work has always been that the chair of the scientific committee would be in charge of the work, and the secretary general could just provide the support to avoid any problems. So all the merits for the book go to Platon, and all the deficiencies are to blame on me. And as a matter of fact, I think that, honestly, Platon and his team and the persons that he mentioned did most of the work on this book, which I think is extremely important in the sense that it contains two elements which are unique. Point number one, it contains a lot of analytical approaches, different approaches, to a very complex issue. Point number two, it is supported by sufficient data. And it is really striking, as we were discussing last week, we realized that on several aspects of this book, the developments since this book was finalized, and that was last year, have already developed. And especially when it comes to the regulatory issues, which I can follow more closely, I know that if we had the opportunity, we'd rewrite the book again. But this is the evolution and this is the dynamics of the subject, because the problem of the NPLs has become one of the major economic problems in the European Union, and recently has become a major regulatory and supervisory issue as well, including the fact that due to the regime change in the European Union, the fact that we have, at least in the Eurozone, and most of the countries we are referring to are Eurozone member states, we have a new supervisory authority, the ECB, which is not anymore a national supervisory authority, but a supranational supervisory authority. Also, the relative weight of this problem has changed. And it is expected, and we already have the signs, that the framework will be strengthened more and more because it becomes evident that a lot of the credibility of the European Central Bank as a supervisory authority will depend on the correct resolution, not a hasty resolution, a correct resolution of this thorny problem in the European economy. My part of the presentation should include some overview of the main legal aspects, being a professor of law. I would say that we have three papers written, and they can be grouped in two groups, even though a third group is also very important. Chapters written by Spiros Pagratis and Nikos Vetas and Christina Lolou, as well as the last one, Konstantinos Klisouras, I would consider them to be two very very innovative papers for the Greek literature in English with regard to the economic analysis of insolvency regulations. So they are not legal papers, but economic analysis of law is mainly a work for microeconomists. So these were the good people to do that, and they have done it sufficiently, even though developments have been such that most of the new regulations which have been adopted in Greece, which reference was made by Nikos Karamouzis, are not included there fully. And at the same time, European regulations have also changed. Nevertheless, from a scientific point of view, they are very important. I would only add one aspect. This is my personal belief. Potentially I'm wrong, but it could be a point of discussion. Striving for the optimal regulatory framework for dealing with NPLs, sometimes we tend to create a moral hazard. Because if there is a continuous change in the legislation on NPLs, then the expectations are that you will have a new legislation which will provide a higher debt relief. And this has been a problem that we are facing now in Greece after 7 years. We had so many different legislations on this aspect, and I hope that the recent one, as mentioned before, will be implemented in such a way that it will not create the incentives for some new reshuffling of the framework, which definitely will increase and prolong this moral hazard embedded in the Greek society during the last 7 years. Then there is a second pillar, not so much discussed and developed, but to my understanding, and the author after all, with Vasily Panagiotidis, very important, is the issue of financial inclusion and financial literacy. And the issue of financial inclusion, you may be surprised to know that financial inclusion is not only a major problem for economically underdeveloped economies. It's a major problem, financial inclusion, both voluntary and involuntary, also in developed economies. And the problem of the NPLs obviously will increase financial exclusion for those who will not be able to repay their debts. And this might be one of the aspects which will reduce the potential for growth in the years to come. And another aspect, I would say a pillar of financial inclusion, is financial literacy. And this is another very important aspect. I feel that you have a lot of borrowers who didn't really understand the terms of their transactions, and the issue of financial literacy is, in my view, one of the major issues that have to be attacked in the years to come at a European level. At least we live in Europe and we need to address it. And it is with my regret to realize that European institutions like the EBA, the ESMA, the EIOPA, the ESAS have it, they do have it as a statutory obligation, and their contribution to this development has been very low. And then you have the third main pillar in the legal institutional regulatory issues, which has to do with the the supervisory treatment of the NPLs. And on this, I don't have the time definitively to develop it, but on some page here, 16, Nikos Karamouzis mentioned before this terrible word, SREP. And SREP stands for Supervisory Review and Evaluation Process. It is the element which is used by the ECB in order to evaluate banks, and at the end of the day come up to the conclusion whether they are solvent or failing or likely to fail. And as Nikos Karamouzis mentioned before, this is a very delicate and developed system on which we could speak hours, and it contains several elements. So the supervisory review made by the ECB and equivalent by other institutions contains some assessment of the capital position, so in that sense including to what extent banks are exposed to NPLs, the liquidity positions and the position, and other requirements including government and reliability. So, as you correctly pointed out, and we had not discussed it before, we didn't have the opportunity to discuss it before, it's not just a mechanic application of rules, it's not just having a certain threshold of NPLs that would lead you to the unfortunate situation of being failing or likely to fail, and I think that this aspect is also worth further discussing and developing. And I know a lot of people who are doing research on this point. One last remark, and I will leave you. I think that Platon mentioned something that people who live in the United Kingdom should know. And if they are not exposed to the Greek situation, they should know it very well, because it gives them potentially a very good hint on what happened in Greece. When you try to find out the nexus between the sovereign and the financial system, mainly based in this country, you tend to believe that it's usually the financial system which may be affecting the sovereign. And this has definitely been the case in Ireland, or has been in Iceland, in this region of the world. But then you have, with all due respect to the dissenting opinion, I think you have more or less a consensus that you have the just opposite case in the case of Greece. In the case of Greece, the banking system in 2008-2009 was not affected by the international financial crisis, at least to the extent that Ireland or other countries were affected. And I'm very glad that I'm not anymore the Secretary General of the Banking Association to say that boldly, because nobody can blame me now that I'm being paid by the banking industry to say that. I strongly believe it. I have written it, And I will continue developing on this because it has been exactly the opposite situation. It was the fiscal crisis which has affected definitively and negatively the Greek banking system with the recapitalizations and all the current developments. So, closing with that reminder, so to say, thank you very much for being here, and we are looking forward to the discussion.
Okay, so I will just have a few remarks on the on the book and the general issues. So my goal will be to provide a bit more context and to maybe some alternative perspectives on some of the issues, also to help you kind of appreciate the value of the book, which I think is the value of the book is significant. So the, in terms of the breadth of its contributions, so. First of all, let me say that I share Platon's Monocrusus' view that we have here an ideal laboratory to examine a number of important issues. Of course, it's an ideal laboratory of, at the same time, you know, people are, firms are going bankrupt and people are losing their jobs and people are getting their houses repossessed. But obviously, kind of, anyway, at the same time, one can learn a lot by what is happening, and there's lots of important stuff that is happening here. So, So we'll give you the perspective of an outside observer on some of these issues. So, just a few graphs to add, to complement to the graphs that Mr. Monocrusos presented. So, the so this is the credit boom in Greece and in a number of other periphery, other countries of the European periphery, as well as the Eurozone average. So this is graph is very consistent with the graph that Mr. Monocrusos showed you earlier. So that Greece had even in 98 and even in 2008 had a smaller percentage of loans, private sector loans to GDP, than Spain, Ireland, Italy, close to Italy, Portugal, and even the Eurozone average. What was remarkable in the case of Greece is that there was a fast growth. So Greece grew from a low level, but the private sector credit grew quite fast, especially consumer credit. I don't show you here in this picture consumer credit. In any case, so what the thing to remember is that at the end of the credit boom, private sector credit in Greece was lower, or though much more comparable than at the beginning, to the Eurozone average. Now, before we go, I show you some data on the credit crunch. I want to show you a little bit of stuff about leverage. So this is household leverage. I will show you data on leverage on households, corporations, and kind of a bit about some suggested information about banks. So these are two measures of household leverage as of 2009. This is a survey conducted by the ECB. So debt service as a percent of income and loans as a percent of value for the household's main residence. So you see here that Greece actually is not that far from the Eurozone average, so Greek households. So the growth of consumer credit during the boom years had brought Greece close to Eurozone average levels, not as close, of course, to Spain or Ireland, but close to the Eurozone average levels. The next picture is about corporates. So this is about book leverage, so book value of debt to book value of assets. And what you see here, I think, for Greece is quite remarkable. So the leverage of Greek firms is, these are public, publicly traded firms, is higher than that of Spain. Spain is the next highest. Italy, France, Germany, and UK. So for some reason, and perhaps, I mean, our view of that is that somehow the cost of equity of Greek firms seems to be quite high for various reasons. Greek households don't trust the stock market as much. There is somehow, has to do with the development of the pension system, the structure of the pension system, the extent of savings in the country. But in any case, the primary way of financing for Greek firms is banks, debt, and as a consequence, there is quite a bit of quite high leverage. Now, this is consistent with the fact that corporate loans to GDP were not very high, what was in the previous picture, were not as high as the Eurozone average, just because there are fewer firms, fewer large firms to take these loans. So anyway, so bottom line, there is high leverage, and there is in the private sector. So it's not that the private sector is like was much safer than the actually was in some ways riskier than the Eurozone average. And the other, I was just going to show you last picture, but this is about the banks. Okay, it's the very bottom, so okay, that's fine. I can move this maybe a little bit. Anyway, so here is just the fine. We're perfectly fine. So this is an index of Greek banks, and this is a global bank index. So both indices are set to 100 in beginning of 2004, and so somehow you see that when things kind of were going up in Greece, they went up by more. When things went down with Lehman, in Greece for Greek banks, they went down by more. Although Greek banks took them some time to be affected by the crisis. I mean, the global index started declining earlier, and then okay, when things started going up again for Greek banks, they went down up more, and then they went down a lot with the sovereign crisis. So in any case, so the things that the volatility of these banks' equity was higher than that of the global and actually the Eurozone index. Same idea if we plot the picture. So which suggests that Greek banks somehow they were exposed to more risks than the average bank, perhaps just because the, I don't know, like kind of maybe how much maybe there is unstable capital flows into kind of some more periphery countries that go in and out more easily. But in any case, does not mean that they had more leverage than the average bank, but somehow that certainly says that they could have reduced these risks if with less leverage. So the bottom line here is that I want to say is that there were significant risks even in the private sector, especially in this graph here. The corporate graph suggests that. And so the narrative of the crisis that is just a fiscal crisis, it's maybe primarily the fiscal crisis, but also there were kind of points of instability in the private sector, and also you know even for households. So anyway, all that stuff is all these calculations come from a chapter in another book by Hayasos, Hardouben, Sutcher, and myself, in a book that called Beyond Austerity: Reforming the Greek Economy, that also just recently came out. So I will show you now a few things about the credit crunch. So now this is the balance sheet of the aggregate of Greek banks according to the Bank of Greece. Essentially, this is how the Bank of Greece determined the capital needs of Greek banks. So this was the core tier 1 capital of the aggregate of the Greek banking sector in 2011, the end of 2011, 22 billion. All this was before the first recapitalization, the big recapitalization. And so what you can see here is that there was most of the losses, I mean, the big loss was the PSI, the loss on the Greek government bonds, which net of provisions just already caused the Greek banking system to become insolvent. In addition to that, there were the projections of credit losses in the private sector loans. This is what the NPL, this is what we... today's book is about, which kind of gave a further kick down. Of course, offsetting this was the fact that Greek banks were going to have to have some profitability, generate capital through their operations. Mr. Karamouzis mentioned quite a bit of that, that this is happening now and has happened also in the past. Actually, it's happening now more. So, anyway, the point is that so the loss on the Greek banking government debt rendered the Greek banking system insolvent, and the projected loss, and these things here made things worse. The fact that this added to all these losses. In fact, every single once we take into account the private sector losses, the losses on private sector loans, every single bank was insolvent. So it was a massive problem. And of course there were a number of policy actions had to be undertaken. The banks had to be restored to solvency. It was a very complicated problem that has been performed successfully. One had to ensure that the banks had the adequate incentives to resolve the NPLs, which is also what we learned quite a lot about that in the book, about these incentives. And also the other kind of dimension of the other major policy action is to reform insolvency laws. Again, we learned quite a bit of that by reading the book. I will mention specific chapters and some ideas. So, but this was a big task. Essentially, you had a banking system that kind of went from being kind of in good shape to every single bank went became insolvent. So they were not like good banks to buy some, to kind of better banks to buy some of the kind of solvent banks to buy the insolvent banks. All right. So now what happened? Okay, just a quick summary of that. I'm already kind of running a bit over time. So the large four banks were recapitalized. Small banks were resolved, and their good bank component was sold off to large banks. There were three recapitalizations. This was the main one, the first one. 28, most of it was public funds, given that the system was insolvent, public funds were needed a lot, and 28 or so billion. Then there was another recapitalization, about 8 billion of private funds, that was just purely by private funds. So some private investors found it worth their while to invest quite a bit of money in the banks. And then in the fall 2015, there was another further recapitalization, which, as Mr. Karamouzis mentioned, was took place under the most adverse scenario, stress scenario, so which required about 13.7 billion of private of funds, private and public. And the existing capital, all this capital that had been raised here, was valued at 0.7 billion, thanks to the superb negotiating techniques of Mr. Tsipras and Mr. Varoufakis. So... Now, banks are... No, okay, now, this is what happened. Now, let's talk a little bit about going forward. So, banks are still weak, and they kind of... We have touched upon this. I mean, they... Partially, they kind of their... As Mr. Karamouzis said, a significant part of their capital is this TDA, the tax-deferred assets. So, partially, deposits, kind of, they are... They don't have many deposits. Deposits to assets is fairly low because they have lost a lot of deposits, and the part, I mean, the whole problem is could be resolved if the economy starts picking up strongly, but the economy is not picking up enough, or hopefully will start picking up in the next few years, but until it picks up, the banks will kind of depend on will have to deal with these NPLs, and the NPLs not improving by themselves. So now there have been some issues about incentives to resolve NPLs. So some of it had to do with provisioning rules, and chapters 9 in the book and 14 in the book give us quite a bit of insight about these incentives to resolve NPLs, about the provisioning rules and what this implied for incentives to resolve the NPLs. So that somehow, for some chapter 14 argues that explains rather why under previous rules that now have been modified somewhat, there were not incentives to really within the banks to resolve NPLs kind of in a decisive way, just to extend and pretend. So now there are some targets that have fairly kind of ambitious targets to which Mr. Karamouzis referred to for banks to resolve NPLs. And anyway, so there was the part of the sometimes a bad bank solution, like the way it has been adopted in Ireland and Spain, as this book explains in chapters 4 and 5, can be quite helpful for putting in the right incentives to resolve with the NPLs as opposed to extending and pretending. But this, for various reasons, this has not happened in Greece. So it's a long discussion. We can talk about it later. So now the other major change, and this is there has been a major change. The supervision of the banks has been taken over by the single supervisory mechanism. So at the Eurozone level, this has brought together with it stricter controls and governance. Although there are some issues about kind of NPLs and how they are handled still. For example, there was a recent issue with Piraeus Bank that came in the news a few weeks ago. So so governance issues can be a problem, but certainly they are kind of improved a lot. So and finally, then another set of challenges have to do with insolvency laws. So first of all, the existing Greece came into the crisis with a legal framework that was quite problematic. It was problematic for handling insolvencies at the individual level or kind of small-scale insolvencies, let alone systemic insolvencies at the systemic level, at a large scale. So, for example, the liquidation of assets, I mean, banks had a hard time liquidating assets, and actually liquidation was not really an option for them. They were not viewing liquidation as an option, by and large. They were trying to... It was so costly that they preferred to try to renegotiate with the firms in some kind of for the continuation of the firm's life as opposed to liquidating the assets. It was kind of lengthy procedures for verifying claims before liquidation could proceed. The auction process was complicated and opaque. Anyway, there were a number of problems. Also, the seniority of claims to the state and employees were senior, and this was causing additional issues. It was kind of prone to liquidating, to going to liquidation as opposed to reorganization, but liquidation was inefficient, so kind of it making things worse, already inefficient because of these previous reasons. So these inefficiencies imply that the shareholders could get significant rents. They could be in some sort of strategic default, which the book touches upon very nicely in chapter 10. So it shows that about one out of six corporate borrowers were strategic defaulters. And I would be surprised if the data for households is any better. So anyway, so they were, so all this inefficient liquidation was conducive to this kind of to rent to shareholders, because creditors, including primarily banks, could not take the assets easily from them and liquidate them. So all this, so there have been significant improvement in legislation to address these inefficiencies, to make liquidation easier, less costly. And some of these were already mentioned. So what the challenge now is for these changes to be implemented, some of these changes, for example, like e-auctions, to get us around all this complicated and opaque auction process, have mostly not started yet. And banks, if I understand correctly, our speakers can say more to that if they want. Repossession of collateral is still difficult because of various kind of protests or threats, even for wealthy borrowers, even for one kind of, there has been some kind of activism around repossessing houses of poor or kind of medium wealth borrowers, but even for wealthy borrowers it becomes difficult. To banks have a hard time repossessing their collateral or of corporates. So anyway, so there are challenges, and they have to be resolved, because for the NPL problem to eventually go away. So this book is a valuable reference on the NPL aspect of the Greek crisis, because it touches on things from a very fairly broad set of issues, both on the macro determinants of NPLs, on the firm level determinants, what determines whether a firm has financial distress, what determines whether the firm is going to become a strategic defaulter, on the banking aspects. So the provisioning rules, how banks provision against their loans, what are the regulation says. On the legal framework, there are some very interesting chapters on telling us about all these challenges that I mentioned in the previous slide, about kind of why they have created problems, how things have improved since the beginning, and also about international practices. About experience of other countries, and the combination of it has a fairly impressive kind of set of people who have contributed, and which kind of comes both from academia and from the practitioner world, and this combination ensures that the analysis is both extensive and quite relevant. So that's it. Let me not say, I have already probably spoken more than I should have. So let me end here, and we can turn to Q&A. Okay. Okay. So let's take some questions. We'll take a few questions together, and then raise hands so that I can. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, so Chris, yes.
I'm sorry, but I'm going to ask a very naive question. What should be done about not performing loans? I mean, you gave a very good analysis of how we got to this point, but so far, with the exception of some very brief remarks by Dimitri Vaganos at the end, mostly of the things you said, it reminds me so much of discussions in Cyprus. It's things that should not be done, like we should not have fire sales, we should not set up a bad bank, we shouldn't have repossessions because of objections and all that. So what can we do? I mean, Cyprus, we're completely lost. We don't know what to do, especially close to elections. And since we have one election every 2.5 years, we don't do anything. Absolutely nothing at all.
All right, okay.
The only thing that anything has ever been done in Cyprus was when the IMF and the European Commission came in and said there's going to be a haircut of your deposits, and if you don't like it, we're going to withdraw all support to the Cyprus banking system. So we did it. Before then and after then, absolutely nothing.
Okay, perfect. Thanks,
so what should be done?
Okay, so let's store this question. Let's take maybe a couple of more. Yeah, Yanni, yeah.
Question, what exactly is going to, I mean, you are under great pressure from the Troika to actually do sell these assets. However, hearing Mr. Karamouzis, I have to say I was very much heartened by the capital position of the banks, which means the banks don't really have to sell because they seem to be adequately capitalized and they can withstand the crisis. So if that's not the case, if you don't have to sell them, and in fact, we have seen few sales. I know some have started, but so far we have seen few sales, probably because there was no agreement on the price. So if you don't have to sell, if the prices that you're being offered mostly by hedge funds are not really very high, and you have the capital adequacy and you have the personnel in the banks, are you going to work them out yourself, which will probably provide more of a social stability going forward?
Okay, let's take one more question. Yes.
Thank you. I wanted to ask, as Professor Gorsuch very well knows, all the recent years' regulation on banking oversight, points, especially in governance, points to individual liability. So the individuals with names in the banks, in Greek banks, that gave all the loans to strategic defaulters, do they still hold their positions? Have we identified people that individually gave loans to specific strategic defaulters, and now are they still there? Are they in more senior positions in the bank? Where are they at the moment? Thank you.
Okay. All right. So thanks. Let's. We have a well-defined batch of questions. Let's try to address those first.
I was surprised that you raised this issue. There's a misperception here that we do nothing. That's not the case. First of all, a year ago, we had no legal framework to do anything. Okay? Sell to whom? The legislation for NPL servicers, it was introduced a few months ago. So to sell to whom? Anyone who is willing to buy needs to have a servicer to assign the loans for management. You would let the same banks that they sell the loans to manage on behalf of the servicers? I don't think this is the first priority for the service, okay? It was not a law about OECW. We had a very complicated law of insolvency law corporate. We still have an amazingly complicated law of household insolvency, what is called the Caccelli law. Okay? When it takes 4 years, I would be 105 years old by the time most cases would be discussed in the Greek court. So now what we have a proper legal framework. Number two, the do-nothing approach, I don't buy. Sorry. Okay? We have committed to specific detail per quarter, per category of assets, targets to reduce NPLs. This year we meet the targets. Next year is 15 billion euros down. We have started doing things. We start selling loans. But what do you think? It's a huge market to buy 30 billion euros of Greek NPLs? Tell me. Okay? It's a market that is developing right now. We have to go slowly, not because it's our choice. It's because the secondary market is just early on its development. So, in my view, a bad bank concept should have been discussed a few years ago. Now, I believe it's too late. It would delay things even more, given the way we approach things. So, I'm not against a bad bank approach, but that should have discussed early on in the crisis. It was discussed, and all the institutions turned this approach down. They opted for bad banks within each bank to manage the NPL problem. Now, in my view, it's too late to reverse that, okay, because it would delay a lot of things. So our commitment is to deliver on these targets. These targets have been agreed with the regulators. The regulators...
But how are you going to meet with them?
Eurobank a few days ago sold 1.6 billion euros of consumer loans. It's
mainly by selling.
They are mainly by selling write-offs, reperforming, which is a slow process right now, and selling repossessed assets. Today, NBG announced it's selling 150 repossessed real estate. All banks are announcing programs to sell loans, repossessed assets. They write off aggressively, and what we call curing or reperforming, it goes slowly given the circumstance. Okay? Now, if you think that's an easy job to do in Greece, I have a nice job to try. I send you to Crete to repossess assets. Kiss your family bye-bye before you go there. And if you come back alive, you say, I made it. Okay, so in certain areas, unless the other day it was on the news, funny but it's a true story, they had to bring 60 policemen to repossess a 60 square meter store in the center of Heraklion, Crete. Okay? So, and at the end, didn't work. Okay? So, on this issue, I think we are clear that we have targets. Yeah, please.
Sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Karamanos. My question is exactly for that reason. That's why I interrupted. Why the banks have not tried to have a more social face to the consumers and to the public by trying to sell the loans to them before trying to sell them to the funds?
Also wrong. I tell you why.
At a higher price.
Okay. It's a good question, but let me give you an even better answer. I speak about Eurobank because I know Eurobank. Okay. We sold 1.6, 1.5 billion euros of consumer loans unsecured. They were delayed 5 years plus. We sent a letter to 150,000 clients. Those they had, they owed to us this 1.6 billion euros. Do you know how many they came to the bank to discuss? 2,000. Okay? So 30% of those, what they do, they change phone, address, and bye-bye Margarita. Try to find them. It's very difficult because if we ask the government to have access to the information they have, we don't. If we ask PPC to give us access on the information they have, we don't. So what I'm saying, we offer an opportunity to bad debtors to come to the bank and buy their loans at a low price. We cannot generalize this because no one will pay at the end. Okay? What we did, we say, look, come to the bank to discuss. And out of 150,000, only 2,000 were kind enough to step in our branches. So it's not that we don't offer the opportunity. It's not that we don't care about people that are in real difficulty. This is wrong. Okay? But don't forget that there are so much, the strategic default is a major issue. Okay, recently we tried to take over a property in one of the richest Greeks with international activities. Okay, and it was a gun outside the auction place. Okay, so we have criminal activities that prevent the auctions, not for the poor people. Most of the criminal activities has to do with preventing us to get our hands on properties of really rich people. Okay? So it's not an easy task. I would stop here because I want my colleagues to add.
If I may add a couple of points about the first issue, the choice of the issue of not choosing a centralized asset management company to deal with NPLs, like in the case of Spain or Ireland. If you look at the current composition of the overall NPL book, around 62% of total outstanding NPLs is corporate loans, small SMEs. The mortgage NPL portfolio is something close to 22% of the total. In the cases of Spain and Ireland, there was a pretty significant concentration in the real estate segment. So the problem in Ireland and Spain was, in my view, more homogeneous. And that's why I think that was one of the reasons that in the case of Greece it was chosen not to create a centralized asset management company, but to have the four systemic banks effectively establishing their own internal bad banks. The second question on strategic default, and this is something that is actually highlighted in several chapters in the book, it has to do with the whole regulatory and legal framework existing in Greece for a number of decades. For instance, the so-called Katselis Law, a continuing suspension of foreclosures. But all these things are changing now since the signing of the third bailout program. Very significant reforms have been implemented, as noted by Mr. Karamouzis. Besides the full liberalization of the servicing and sale of NPLs, there have been significant reforms to basically establish, for instance, an out-of-court workout, which is broadly in line with international best practice, and the purpose is to provide a fast-track mechanism to deal with both corporate, both debt to the banking system, but also debt to the state. E-auctions. There has been, you know, the new platform is fully operational, and many other reforms that are pretty new. So there has been a lot of activity, regulatory measures, regulatory interventions, which, along with the very granular and ambitious targets agreed by banks with their regulators, are likely to lead to, let's say, a speedier process in reducing NPLs. So I think that there has been a lot of progress over the last 2 years to deal with the whole issue, at least as regards Greece.
Okay. All right. So let's maybe take one or two more questions, and then we can close. Christo, yeah, of course. I didn't realize.
As to the third question, obviously the answer should be given by the supervisors. So address yourself to the supervisors and ask whether they have done their job well. The Bank of Greece and then the European Central Bank. Nevertheless, please, one note that one has to be very careful when speaking about the identification of strategic defaulters in advance. I think that if you have a model according to which you can identify the strategic defaulter when providing a loan, you would definitely get the Nobel Prize for 3 consecutive years. You don't have it. And we have some rough estimations by exposed behavior, how people behave. So the bulk of the loans, which are non-performing now, were given in an economy in which the experience on the behavior of consumers or firms was not very significant. This is correct. I would say that there were some supervisory failures on that as well. I have been very critical myself to the fact that the list on collecting information, the white list of Tiresias, was not adopted before the liberalization of credit risk. A lot of non-performing loans could potentially have been avoided, but nevertheless, on average, one has to take into account the fact that you had a growing economy during which there was, it was shown by Dimitri Vagianos, there was a credit expansion, but at the same time, this credit expansion was not extensive, and it simply started from a very low point. That's another peculiarity. We didn't have any market for credit loans to consumers in the beginning of 2001 when the country joined the European Union, the Eurozone. So in that sense, there is a lot that can be discussed about the past, but blaming specific persons on this, please address yourself to the supervisory authorities who should have known better if there was a problem.
Okay, so let's take one last question. I have two hands. Okay, let's take two questions and we'll see how it goes. Okay, one and the you and then, yeah, gentlemen, and then you can ask. Yeah, please go ahead.
Thank you. Two major determinants of the creation of NPLs are the drop in GDP and output in a country and the wealth effect. And you had various very interesting comparisons in the beginning between the peripheral countries, let's call them, and the average European performance. On that score, I think that would it be possible to identify the contribution of the, let's call it, income effect and wealth effect to this creation of bad debts in Greece, because Greece and Cyprus, to some extent, had a significant contribution from the wealth effect. A haircut on Greek government bonds, which impacted the banks as well, 37 billion. Huge amount, okay, which is forgotten here, 37 billion. Second, the loss in value from the stock market, because in part of that, the loss in value from real estate. So there have been many components of the wealth effect vis-a-vis the income effect, and Cyprus had a haircut on deposits. So can we understand whether we had the non-performance because of the loss in GDP and unemployment and recession, or because of the contribution from the wealth effect? Okay.
All right, perfect. Let's take last question, and then we can answer those and we'll be done. Yeah?
I was wondering, what do you think the solution is to non-performing loans arising in SMEs as opposed to large companies?
Okay, actually there's a chapter in the book. Okay, fine, perfect. Okay, so let's take those two questions. Platon, you want to say something?
Yes, yes. Let me try to address Mr. Nanopoulos' question. Actually, there are a couple of empirical studies in the book that provide some quantitative estimates on the impact of these macroeconomic factors, such as the drop in the output, the increase in the unemployment rate, the wealth effect. There is a study, if I'm not mistaken, on chapter 12, which claims that around 75% of the, up to 75% of the increase in NPLs in Greece over the period 2008-2015 can be attributed to both macroeconomic factors and some intrinsic factors related to increased uncertainty, the liquidity squeeze, the increased fiscal pressure. There is a part of this, let's say, increase in the NPLs that remains unexplained by the models shown. And there, in the unexplained part of this, let's say, variability, variance in NPLs, one can attribute, for instance, certain other effects and drivers, such as strategic default and moral hazard issues. But the answer is yes, that there are some quantitative estimates in the book discussing all these effects.
Chris, do you want to say something about the SME?
Add to this, there is a not anymore so current study, it's not mentioned in the book, of the Committee on the Global Financial System. It's one of the international fora based in Basel at the BIS of 2011, which is identifying all the channels for the transmission of problems from a sovereign insolvency to the banking sector and the real economy. And they have a list of 11 channels, and all 11 channels were activated in Greece, meaning that the wealth effect was huge, one way or another. It was not only the haircutting of the Greek government bonds. The 37 billion euros means almost the capital of that at that time of the banking sector. So the losses that were incurred for the banking sector were more than their capital basis.
Yeah, the total capitalization I added is approximately 37 billion.
Exactly. So you had losses on the other fronts, so the wealth effect on the stock exchange, the fact that the state could not repay its debts to the banking sector and to the individuals, which continues up to now, which is aggravating their ability to repay their debt. So we have a huge amount of outstanding debt of the state accumulated throughout all these years to individuals who potentially could have repaid part of the debt. So it's not a unilateral solution, and it's very difficult to find.
I would say one day a lot of professionals will study the case of Greece, because it's a case of failed politics and failed economic approach. We ended up having a fiscal and competitive problem, and we ended up losing 1/4 of the GDP, having today public debt which is 30% higher than the one we had before we started the crisis, half of the loans to be non-performing, an economy that has been in a recession for 10 years, this year is coming. So it has been a major, major crisis with a huge social and economic cost, unprecedented. Okay? So you wouldn't expect the banking to survive when you lose 1/4 of GDP, unemployment goes to 27%, and we lost half of deposits. In Argentina, in 2000, 2001, when there was a crisis, they lost 27% of the total deposits. We lost almost 50% of the total deposits. And if we had not imposed capital controls in the summer of 2015, before they imposed the capital controls, we are losing $3 billion per day. Okay? So you understand that these are really amazing, amazing numbers, and we are glad to be alive. We are glad we escaped all the 2015 saga, and things are looking better. We have to stick on this approach. There's no other way. It's one only way. Continue the reforms, continue sticking with the program, and get the country out of the difficulty. But it's an amazing story, really.
Does anybody want to say something about this SME, this question about the SMEs versus large firms? This was any particular comment? No. All right, fine. Okay, fine. We'll pass on this. We'll talk about this afterwards. All right. Okay.
Can I add something to what has been discussed now?
Over just a few seconds, though.
Yeah, a few seconds. Now, we all know that in Greece there is an extensive black economy, side economy, which is not measured and cannot be measured easily, and is not in the numbers we see.
I cannot recall the question.
Is this a positive factor? Is something that will somehow people live in not a terrible condition? Or is it something that will help the country recover? Because it still exists.
Let's leave this hanging in the air, and maybe we can...
Well, it's hanging in the air for years, but...
After all the tax increases, we are still collecting 9 billion euros less than what we were collecting in 2009.
Okay, let's stop here. So let's thank our...
About tax policy.
Sorry, okay.